The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in
it
your
settles
soul.
In your soul.
The Soul of Jefferson.
Talking about the Soul of Jefferson, Mama J. This is Terry Raposa and
Janet Chandler.
Yep.
I'm back.
AKA Mama J. Glad to have you back. So glad to have you back.
Thank you so much. I had a good 2 weeks visiting family in Arizona.
Outstanding. Anyway, we're broadcasting live here from KCNR Studios in downtown Reading. 96.5 FM, where the music does sound better. 1460 AM, we are your talk radio. And we are streaming live on KCNR1460.com, KCNR1460.com. And if you want to re-listen to this or you have to go in the middle of it, you can go back to the archives. Just go to Programming, Jefferson State of Mind, M-I-N-E, and boom, it'll be right there. In fact, it's, what, 5 minutes, Alex, after we're done?
About 5 minutes.
Yeah. Alex is our... is our guy.
Oh, thanks, man.
He's our guy.
Yep.
He gets the stuff done behind the scenes. So anyway, we're going to have a good friend and a patriot. I would arguably say that, you know, the father of a lot of the movements we have here, for freedom and liberty in California, and definitely the father of the state of Jefferson.
We're talking about the Soul of Jefferson.
The Soul of Jefferson,
right?
Mark Baird. Yeah, totally. And we're going to get to that, but we have a quick announcement first. Just so folks know, Congressman Doug LaMalfa's memorial will be January 24th at 12 p.m. It's at the Silver Dollar Fairgrounds in Chico. Now, the doors open at 10 a.m., and parking begins at 9:30, but understand there's going to be security screenings for everybody that goes in. There's no weapons of any kind. And you're going to need a ticket to get in. Now, you can find that ticket online. Just search engine Doug LaMalfa, and you'll find it there. Also, when you get that ticket, it'll be emailed to you within 2 days prior to the event. Now, they don't want any flowers or anything. They just want, if people want to give, they want them to give to the Oroville Rescue Mission. So that's my announcement for the day. So without further ado, our friend Mark Baird. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Very well. Eager to hear what the latest information is on Baird versus Bonta.
Yeah, well, the latest information is the state, in my opinion, they must be running a little scared on this one because they appealed to the en banc rather quickly. And the en banc must be running a little scared, although technically the en banc panel has not accepted this case for en banc review yet, but the motions panel asked for a rebuttal from us, like, immediately. Within an hour of the state's filing, the en banc motions panel was asking for a rebuttal from our side to the state's application for en banc.
Mark, can you explain en banc to the folks that are listening, what en banc is and how we got to that process?
Sure. First of all, let me just say, courts steal your liberty every day, all day. They spend all day doing it. And a good friend of ours once said that the dirty tricks bucket that judges have has no bottom. That's all true. We've run into this time and time again in the Jefferson lawsuit, the CFR lawsuit, and I run into it for 7 years now with the Second Amendment lawsuit. And so here's the purpose of an en banc panel. An en banc review is, in most circuit courts, all of the judges will rehear, all of the judges in the Ninth Circuit would ordinarily rehear a case. But because the Ninth Circuit is so big, there are like 35 judges. They don't use all of them. I think they use 11, I believe. And I could be wrong. Could be, it's either 11 or 13, and I can't remember. And the chief magistrate is always one of them, ostensibly as a tiebreaker, I guess. But cases that are accepted for en banc review are extremely rare. I mean, most of the time, once a three-judge panel decides a case, that's it. And it has to be of special note, or there has to be special judicial misconduct or something. Because remember, appellate cases are not reheard in theory just because the judges didn't like the way they turned out in the circuit court. They're reheard because of judicial misconduct or procedural errors or something that the appellate court would consider that the ruling wasn't fair to either the plaintiff or the defendant because of something the court did. Not anything that the parties to the case did, but something that the court did wrong. So in this case, Judge Mueller completely ignored the Ninth Circuit's advice and wisdom and their order to rehear my case and not act as an advocate for the state, not act as a state's attorney to support the Constitution, whether she liked what's in it or not, and so on. And so when I got to the Ninth Circuit, because Judge Mueller had made so many procedural errors, she failed to review the merits of the case, and on I could go on for about an hour because that woman is a Democratic hack. Thankfully, she's retired now, and she's going to teach law at Columbia University.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so the Ninth Circuit accepted the case for rehearing, and we asked them to do a de novo review. In other words, as though you'd never heard the case before, because the federal court refused to answer the only question we asked. We asked one question in federal court. Are penal codes 25850 and 26350 unconstitutional or not? Or do we have rights? In other words, do we have a Second Amendment right or don't we? And the federal court never answered the question. The appellate court kind of swiped at the question, but didn't answer it either, not at least not squarely. But at any rate, they did declare that 25850 and 26350, the open carry of any weapon in California in public, is unconstitutional, and the open carry of an unloaded pistol anywhere in the state of California is also unconstitutional, according to the appellate court. And there was a dissent. We'll get into that in a little bit. So the state is horrified. They're just like, the attorney general claims that it's going to terrify children. It's going to upset everyday life in California. It'll be a living hell here. A hellish nightmare because there'll be guns on the streets of California. Now, mind you, it is not a hellish nightmare when the governor declares that rioters attacking federal officers in Los Angeles and anybody else they want to attack, that's okay. In fact, he encourages that. That's not a hellish nightmare. But you being able to defend yourself without government permission, that's a hellish nightmare. I mean, when you look at the hypocrisy of these people and the arrogance, it just is absolutely mind-numbing. So what they did was, when they didn't like the decision that the appellate court came out with, they appealed to the panel of judges, the en banc. Now, like I said, in the Ninth Circuit, it's not all the judges. It's only 11 or 13 of them, I forget which. But the point is, those judges are supposed to be selected randomly. Now, in 100 years of Ninth Circuit jurisprudence, the only cases that make it to the en banc panel 100% of the time, with one exception that isn't even worth talking about, are Second Amendment cases. And interestingly enough, 100% of the Second Amendment cases that prevail on behalf of the Second Amendment, 100% of those cases go to the en banc. It's very rare in any other case. And in any circuit in the country, en banc review is very rare. It just almost never happens. But in California, the Second Amendment is subject to en banc review every single time. And guess what happens? Because, look, the en banc panel does not take a case to cure procedural errors. They take the case because they don't like the way it turned out and they want to overturn it. That's the only reason to do it. And when you look at the logic of that, it's indisputable. They don't say, oh, well, this judge kind of made a mistake. They just say, we don't like what you did, three-judge panel, so we're going to fix it by overturning it. And therefore, the en banc panel is an agent of the state of California. And I'll prove that when we go through the case, because the dissenting judge, a Bush appointee, by the way, who is a statist, you know, the idea of you having a weapon without government permission is absolutely appalling to Judge Smith, and he made some torturous moves to illustrate that. I mean, for example, he consented with the opinion when my preliminary injunction was denied, and he was one of the people that ordered Judge Mueller to stop acting as an attorney for the state, but then in this case, he goes on to act as an attorney for the state. He not only suggested what they should have done, he even, in his dissent, wrote a piece of legislation which he claims the court can pass in order to prevent people from having guns without government permission. So, you know, look, these guys are, we have some patriots, I thank God for them, but we have some agents of the government that just cannot, they cannot abide the fact that people have rights. And that's what this case is about. So we have to write this rebuttal, and it's not due until February 6th, but I'm sure we'll present it before that. And then we'll wait for the en banc panel to decide whether they're going to take the case, and that's why our rebuttal is very important. I mean, you know, we might be in the situation that's a 1 out of 1,000 where actually conservatives are the majority of the randomly selected judges. Mathematically, that is possible. It just never happens.
Now, how long would it be as far as if they made a decision to take the case? What is there any, again, is this, we're sort of at the mercy of their timeline, or how do you see that playing out?
Well, I mean, you know, here's the reality, and everybody might as well get used to this. There is no mechanism under which people can compel a federal court to do its job. There's no mechanism to tell them to act expediently. There's no mechanism to get after them if they don't. You can't make them do their job. They'll do it in their own time, whatever they want. If it takes 10 years, it takes 10 years. If it takes 10 months, it takes 10 months. And that's just the world that we have allowed to be created for us.
Yeah, I mean, there's just been so much. I mean, there's an argument of people getting elected with cheating, et cetera, but we happen to have a lot of people who like the liberal way of life and the liberal meaning of politics.
Until we run out of money.
Until we run out of money, you know, there's been a lot of, we had five of the gubernatorial candidates here in Reading this last week, this last Thursday night they spoke, and a couple of them are talking about stepping across to the other side of the aisle, you know, that's what they're going to do.
That's a hard no then, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a hard no. I mean, and it's just the ignorance of thinking that that's going to work, trying to compromise. Just ask Brian Daly, and I know you've had thoughts on that. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, look, ignorance works on the on behalf of the state. It does. I mean, that's a reality. It's not a hypothesis. But I want people to understand the reality that has been lost to history or lost to ignorance or lost to lack of study, I don't know what, but this is the reality. In 1787, when the Continental Congress sat down to write the Constitution of the United States, and remember, this isn't a founding document. The Constitution is our second try. We had the Articles of Confederation that didn't pan out. And through spurious means, the Continental Congress tossed that document in the garbage, and they sat down to write a constitution. And during that writing, there were two groups of people, the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists. The Anti-Federalists, George Mason was one of the leaders of that group, they declared that we needed a Bill of Rights, that people needed rights that were above government's table. In other words, they weren't open to question. They weren't open to any government interference. They weren't open to government monkeying or court monkeying or anything else. These rights are inalienable, given us by our God. They're pre-governmental rights, because remember, while he's sitting there talking about this, the Constitution hadn't been written yet. And our founding document, the Declaration of Independence, says we are endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights. Among those, that's not the entire list, is life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And then Samuel Adams and a lot of the founders, and a lot of the pre-founders, like John Locke and William Blackstone and Marcus Cicero and a lot of people, Montesquieu, people whom the founders read to gather their ideas, because none of the ideas in the Constitution or Bill of Rights or Declaration of Independence are new. They didn't invent them. They were pre-governmental, God-given rights. And among those is the right to life, liberty, and property, and according to Sam Adams, together with the ability to defend those things the best you can. John Locke said self-defense is the first of the natural rights. William Blackstone agreed with him. Most of the colonial charters had a Bill of Rights with firearms included. In other words, self-defense. All of the state constitutions from the 13 colonies had a Second Amendment, basically, in them. The right to keep and bear arms, and that right shall not be infringed in one verbal form or another. So when we got to the Constitution, we already had the pre-governmental, God-given, inalienable right to defend oneself, and nothing was mentioned about begging the government's permission for the ability to do that. In fact, George Mason was so adamant when they were going to vote on the Constitution without a Bill of Rights, he stomped out and he wouldn't vote on it. And so John Adams sat down, James Madison sat down, and he wrote the Bill of Rights.
Right.
Now, when Madison wrote the Bill of Rights, guess what he started with? A blank paper, a blank sheet. He could have written anything he wanted. He could have written the Second Amendment that it only includes single-shot pistols. He could have written that only smoothbore muskets are included. He could have written that you have to beg every person you pass on the road for permission to carry your rifle before you actually carry it. He could have written anything, but he didn't. He wrote very simply in the language that could be, and one of the points of the Bill of Rights, it's written in a language that an ordinary person can understand and there's no mistake. It is very simple. There is no confusion. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. Ask yourself why. Why are armed individuals necessary for the security of a free state? But anyway, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people, not the permission, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Now, at least five of the first, there were 17 amendments proposed, 12 ratified, I think, by the Senate, and 10 by the states. So the first 10. That's why they call the Bill of Rights the first 10 amendments. And in addition to that, at least five of those rights are called negative rights. In other words, they include statements like Congress shall make no law, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, no person will be held, and on and on. And what the implication of that is, in plain language for anybody to read and anybody to understand and anybody to exercise, is you have rights that are above government. Government has no authority and no jurisdiction to interfere with those rights, because governments do not have rights. A government is the object of the contract that was written and ratified in 1789, nothing more. California's Constitution is a contract written by people that created the entity we call government in 1850, and that government has no rights. Only people have rights. Article 1, Section 1, Article 2, Section 1, definitely calls them out on that. Article 2, Section 1, all just powers derive from the people. Government was instituted for their good, not its own good, not what it thinks over what the people think. and it is the right of the people to alter or reform that government any time the public good demands it. So, you know, you don't have to wait for the next election. It doesn't have to be an initiative. Well, how do you exercise that right without the ability to have arms? And the answer is you don't. You're a slave. Joe Stalin knew it. Mao knew it. Khrushchev knew it. Castro knew it. Hugo Chavez knew it. Maduro knew it. Every dictator in the world knows that a disarmed population is a precursor to government tyranny.
Well, you know, even in Jesus said it. Luke 22:32 specifically says that, hey, if you don't have a sword, get one, and trade your cloak if you need to get it. So, I mean, that's the deal. You always talk about, and rightly so, that we have these rights from God. We do. That's exactly correct.
And even,
but not according to the state of California.
Well, even the state of California in its constitution says that part of your rights are enjoying and defending life and property and liberty. So how else do you defend your life and your liberty without arms?
And how do you enjoy
it? Well, here's how you do it. Here's how you do it in California. You go down and you beg for a permit that's never, ever been issued in the history of the program. Or you go down and beg for a permit that tells you where you can do it, when you can do it, what kind of gun you can have. Oh, and by the way, you need to register each and every gun with us so that we know exactly what you have, and we know exactly where you live, and we know exactly who you are. And, oh, also, one other thing, even though there is a legal concept called innocent until proven guilty, you have to prove to the state that you're not a crook before they declare you innocent enough to carry in the beginning. And Judge Mueller asked that. Well, who would be allowed to carry? My attorney says, well, lawful individuals. Well, who are they? As she says, really? A judge says, well, who are lawful individuals? And my attorney says, well, Your Honor, that would be anyone that's never been convicted of a crime.
That's kind of like asking, what is a woman?
Well, then the judge says, isn't it true that anybody at any time could be a criminal? And my lawyer says, no, Your Honor, law-abiding individuals are law-abiding. That's why they're called law-abiding. Criminals are called criminals because they've committed a crime. So, no, it's not possible for everyone to be a criminal until the state decides that they're not.
Okay. Mark, now that we have Baird versus Bonta with a positive opinion from the court, what do we have? How does that look now in California with the right to openly carry?
And we need to get to that question after the break. Let's take the break right now because it's going to take Mark a few minutes to answer that one. So with that, we will take a break here. Time's come.
For 51.
And we're getting it done.
Amen.
Every day, your life is filled with choices. And when a health crisis happens, you need to be prepared to choose the best healthcare partner. That's when Shasta Regional Medical Center is there to answer the call above the rest. Ranked best in Reading and in the nation for patient safety and clinical excellence, you can be confident that when you choose Shasta, you are choosing superior care, safety, and excellence for you and your family. Choose Shasta at ShastaRegional.com.
Do you have something you'd like to get painted? Then bring it to Victory Powder Coating. Powder coating is a durable, colorful, environmentally friendly alternative to paint. It's useful in automotive, agricultural, decorative, and high-temperature applications. Victory Powder Coating has become the North State leader in powder coating applications and metal finishing. They specialize in large industrial items like truck beds, agricultural equipment, and trailers. They're dedicated to providing superior work and outstanding customer care. Consider Victory Powder Coating for your next project. Victory Powder Coating.
Attention veterans, did you know that Shasta College and Simpson University have veterans resource centers to assist you in your educational pursuits? These centers offer a wide range of support services, including financial aid, tutoring, IT support, and more. We understand the unique challenges that veterans face and are committed to helping you succeed. Our experienced staff is here to help you navigate the college experience and achieve your academic and career goals. Don't let anything stand in your way. This message is brought to you by Senator Maurice Johannesson, former Secretary of California Veterans Affairs.
Plan your day with the Sue McClain News Hour on KCNR. Your weekday weather forecast equips you to tackle any weather, rain or shine. sponsored by the Queen of Dragons, a local champion delivering premium flour, edibles, and concentrates with free delivery to Shasta Lake. Their Flower Fridays deal runs all weekend until stock's gone, so grab it fast. Support local by visiting X, Facebook, or thequeenofdragons.com. KCNR keeps you in the loop every day.
Come to my house, I'll tell you right now. I'll give you my gun when you pry it from my cold, dead hand. Start with my middle finger.
We're back.
We're back.
By the way, that was Jesus said that in Luke 22. 36, not
right.
32. And when's going to read it?
He said to them, but now if you have a purse, take it, and also a bag. And if you don't have a sword, sell your cloak and buy one. It is written.
I would imagine that every Christian understood what that meant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and also, you know, I think that, I don't think there's much of a dispute anymore that protecting ourselves is a right, and there's no dispute about the Second Amendment. I think the thing is that Janet's going to ask the question here about some of the action. Go ahead, Janet.
Oh, okay, Mark. I mean, we are just all thrilled that the court, at least two out of three, came up with a decision that favors you. So what does Baird versus Bonta look like in California now? How does that change how things are? And explain the difference between counties over 200,000 population and counties under 200,000 population, and what do we have now that you have won?
Well, the answer to that is we have nothing at the moment because under the federal rules of appellate procedure, a mandate has to issue from the court that issued the decision of the Van Dyke and Lee and Smith court panel. And they haven't issued that mandate yet, and the reason they haven't is the state has guaranteed to itself, of course, not to the people, but to itself, a certain period of time which it can appeal a decision that it doesn't like to the en banc panel. They have now made that appeal. However, the time is still ticking on the mandate, because if the en banc panel doesn't accept their appeal within the mandate time, then the mandate issues, and we have the open carry of loaded weapons in the state of California. So if the en banc fails to take the case, and look, that's a remote possibility, but God's in charge, and it is a possibility, then we will have open carry of loaded weapons in the state of California. Now, the panel itself, the dissenting justice in particular, he was wiggling so hard trying to find some way, because, look, here's another thing that courts can do. A court can take a redwood tree and turn it into a toothpick if it wants to, not without an axe, just in verbiage. You know, they twist case law, they twist precedent, they don't read full sentences, they omit citations, they omit quotes, they read things out of context, you know, so, and that's what the dissenting justices tried to do. And that is essentially what the state is hanging its hat on with the en banc. And what they're saying is, well, the California's lawmakers wisely, after they banned the Second Amendment completely with the Mulford Act, they wisely decided to allow responsible law-abiding citizens to obtain permits for concealed carry. And the state's argument is you can ban one thing as long as you allow another. In other words, I think that the state, in its zeal to ban everything or make it so difficult to get something in the area of self-defense, I think they painted themselves in a corner.
And now, well, how long is this a mandate supposed to last, do you think?
Yeah, we have until about the end of the month before the mandate would have to issue. So if the en banc doesn't take this case before the end of the month, the mandate issues, and that orders a federal judge to enter judgment on my behalf. He doesn't have any latitude. You know, maybe he can kick the can down the road a month or two, but the order to him is to enter judgment on my behalf, striking 25850 and 26350. So at that point, you could carry a loaded firearm anywhere in the state of California, and you could also carry an unloaded pistol. So the thing with 25850 is I didn't attack rifles because 25850 is a weapons ban. So 26400 still stands. Don't carry your rifle unloaded anymore. I mean, some of these things are so ridiculous, it just defies description. Yeah, you could be arrested for carrying an unloaded rifle, but not a loaded one.
And when you were talking about the Bill of Rights earlier, how and why do we allow the bureaucrats, the electeds, the appointeds, to feel that they have the ability or the responsibility to translate the very simple Bill of Rights and Constitution that a third grader can understand? Why do they always feel like they have to translate it? I don't understand it. Why aren't they following it? It's a rule book for what we need to be doing. Why are they not following the rules?
Well, that's an easy one. Control. I mean, they do it because, number one, we the people allow it.
We allow
and number
it.
Two,
yep.
They do it because it gives them more control over you. I mean, gee, how would the state of California do all the things it does if they were actually afraid that the people had a mechanism to stop them?
I think the people do, but that's
I mean,
you know,
you look at Joe Stalin, and he said ideas are more dangerous than guns. We don't let people have ideas. Why on earth would we let them have guns? I mean, these are things that are they're locked in history. Look, there have been more people that have been murdered in the name of communism than any other political idea on the planet. And yet, our defense against tyranny is the Second Amendment, and we're not defending it.
Yeah.
I'm trying to defend it, and the people that are helping me are definitely trying to defend it, but the people in general don't even understand it. And that I blame the education system for. They don't understand what a right is. They've never read the Bill of Rights. They don't understand what a negative right is. They've never read the Constitution. They don't understand the proper role of government. What is the proper role of government? Is it to tell you every breath you can take and every step you make and what kind of car you can have and what kind of lawnmower you can have? I don't think so. You know, the first rule that government is responsible to uphold is to defend the liberty of the people. They don't do that at all. They do everything but that.
Right now,
our educational system is trying to tell everybody that everything that you want is a right. I want free food, I want free housing, I want free medical care because those are all rights. You cannot have a right that is dependent on the labor or the resources of another person.
Okay, well, let's look at the Bill of Rights very quickly, even where this court's concerned, okay? So this court, the en banc panel, is you know, in all probability, going to deliver a blow to the Second Amendment by reversing this decision. But now, let's look at the First Amendment, just as a matter of course. Can you imagine any court in the country saying that you would have to have permission from the government and you would have to have a background check and fingerprint check and you'd have to have a class and you'd have to go to a class, you'd have to demonstrate your ability to speak freely and to go to church and to peacefully assemble to petition the government for redress of grievance or to write a newspaper based upon the fact that you were able to gain government permission, and not everybody's able to do it. I mean, look at the open carry permits in counties of under 200,000. Shall issue, really? Well, no such permit has ever been issued. So does that make them shall issue? I don't think so. So can you imagine a court upholding permission to speak freely, permission to worship? Can you imagine
they did
that in order
COVID.
To be... Yeah.
They did
can you imagine,
and that's why it was unconstitutional.
That's right.
Well, California did it, and that's why it was unconstitutional, and why, but anyway, that's another show probably. But can you imagine a court that said you have to have permission from the government to have a fair trial? That you have to have permission from the government to be free from unlawful searches and seizures? You gotta go get a permit first and submit to a background check and get fingerprints and convince the sheriff that he's never gonna need to search you. And then he'll give you a permit to exercise Fourth Amendment guarantees? I can't. And in Bruin it says that the Second Amendment is not a second-class right, subject to a different set of rules than all the rest. Well, according to the state of California, it very much is a second-class right. In fact, it isn't a right at all. It's a permission, and a state is free to withhold permission or give permission as it sees fit, when it sees fit.
You know, when people,
that's the problem with their case.
When people talk about revolution, you know, that can be considered sedition or insurrection, but what we really need is a reformation to reform the government and put us rightly at the top. That may take a little more than just going to court. And it may take a little bit more than just trying to elect the right person.
Well, and keep in mind, too, the government is a pyramid, but it's upside down.
Exactly.
It's not right. It needs to be the people at the top, the mass of the people, working down to the point of those that are elected to do the job that they were elected to do, or appointed, or whatever. So we need to make sure that we stand strong on this. Mark, you also, it just escaped me. It'll come back to me at 3 o'clock in the morning. Sorry about that.
I do have a question. So let's assume that everything goes your way and either the mandate gets issued or the en banc says no, the three judge panel decision stands. Then what does Baird versus Bonta look like in California? Can we walk around without permission? How does it work now? And how would it be different from Arizona and Nevada, which are also in the Ninth Circuit?
Well, I mean, there are only two states in the Ninth Circuit that don't already have constitutional carry, and that's California and Hawaii.
Right.
All the other states, and that upsets the Attorney General's little argument about, children would be scared and everyday life would be impossible. Really, well, in that case, how is it possible for every single state in the circuit except two of them? How is it possible for 30 states in this nation to have constitutional, unpermitted carry, unregulated, unpermitted carry? How is it possible for them to live their lives if he's right?
I guess they have tougher kids.
Well, the answer is he's wrong. But what we need to do is we really need a grand awakening. We need... And this goes back to the state of Jefferson, quite frankly. This grand awakening would be far easier if we could create our own state and we could start with a blank slate and do it right. That would be the easiest way to do it.
Amen.
But at the moment, I mean, you know, we may have that. And this, I hope this helps push people over the edge. I really do, because that's my intent here.
So we've got this difference between counties over 200,000, counties less than 200,000.
Yes.
So does that mean that right now, in a county of fewer than 200,000 population, I have open carry?
No. You have the ability to beg the government's permission to open carry.
So
you don't have open carry.
Those over 200,000 can't even get a permit? Is that the idea?
That's right.
Okay.
In counties of over 200,000, there is no permit. It's a ban on the Second Amendment.
Okay.
And, you know,
just to clarify, that would be a ban on open carry, not a ban on CCWs. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Right. But permission isn't a right.
It is not a right. Correct.
They have banned the Second Amendment in counties of over 200,000, and they have restricted the Second Amendment to a thing that's impossible because no permits have ever issued in counties of under 200,000, which is an outright ban. Now, what the court did was they dismissed my claim in counties of under 200,000, and they used procedural gobbledygook to do it, and it would take too long to explain how that happened. But so if the mandate issues, you will have unpermitted open carry of a loaded weapon in counties of more than 200,000, but the statute requiring government permission to openly carry in counties of less than 200,000 would still theoretically remain. But if you ask yourself this question, if there is no criminal statute for carrying a loaded weapon anywhere in public in the state of California, and there are no criminal penalties for openly carrying a weapon in the state of California, who cares about asking permission?
Well, that's the thing. If you're asking permission for a constitutional carry ability, then you still have to get a permit to do that? Is that? I guess I'm kind of
like confused. I just said, if there are no criminal penalties for openly carrying, Yeah, I guess you could go ask permission if you wanted to, but what would happen to you if you didn't ask permission?
Right.
The answer is nothing, because there are no criminal penalties anymore.
And well, Sheriff Johnson has already said that he would not issue open carry permits.
Well, that's the thing. And
that's
then,
our sheriff in Shasta County.
Then, yeah. Well, isn't that odd in a shall-issue state?
Yes.
And that's exactly,
he calls himself a constitutional sheriff.
That's exactly why I've attacked these statutes, because
yeah.
even though the state says they're one thing, they do another, and they're liars. And so if any permission is required, they're going to lie, and you won't get it, or it's not going to be what you think it is. So what I want is I want to vindicate the right to self-defense and defense against a tyrannical government. No enumerated right requires government permission. And the Second Amendment is not a second-class right subject to a different set of rules than all the rest, and there is no historical tradition in this country from 1791, in fact, well before 1791, that requires permission before you openly or carry a weapon however you want, for that matter, but open carry has been specifically protected all the way through the antebellum period, all the way into the early 20th century. In other words, there were a lot of cases that said you can't ride around brandishing. There were a lot of cases that said you can't leave your house with a weapon with the intent to harm someone. There were a lot of cases that said you could only concealed carry if you were on a train or if you were a traveler or if you had some other need to stick your gun in your pants instead of wear it in a holster on your belt. You know, they restricted that conduct to certain things. However, there was no law that said you had to have permission prior to the exercise of an enumerated right, with one single exception. Black people couldn't have guns unless they had permission from their masters. Now, what happened in 1967? Oh, the state said, oh, black people can't carry guns. Now, unfortunately for us, they said, well, in order to make that stick, we're going to have to take the guns away from everybody. But the reason they did it was to take black people's guns away from them. So let that settle for just a second, folks. I mean, and the state of California defends that law. They'll say, well, yeah, I mean, it was racially motivated, and that's probably not too good an idea, but it is proof that states could do it. That's how they defend that.
Well, it's the same thing with marriage licenses. They only exist because the government wanted to prevent blacks and Caucasians from intermarrying.
Well, that's right. I mean, you know, so we do have some historical precedent for restricting the rights of the people. However, we are the people. We have rights. We need to exercise those rights. And unfortunately, because not enough people are willing to just stand up and do it, I had to go to court. And I'm going to fight this fight all the way to its logical conclusion. Now, if this goes to the Supreme Court, and if I were California, I would take the loss. Because, first of all, it only affects California and Hawaii. It doesn't affect anybody else anyway. And I would bet the lights would be on in the legislature 24 hours a day until they came up with 40 laws that make open carry so difficult or so expensive no one will want to do it. But they're not going to do that because their arrogance knows no boundary. They think because of who they are, they can regulate who you are and what rights you have. That's what they honestly think. They do.
You'd think states like New York would be telling California, shut the heck up.
Yeah, but they're arrogant to the point. They are arrogant to the point
they
that
are.
They are. They wouldn't listen. So,
yeah,
if this goes in favor of me en banc, get ready, because we're going to have a window and we need to exercise our right and we need to resist the legislature's really inescapable adventure to restrict our rights further once we get them back. Now, if it goes against me en banc, then for reasons I'm not going to talk about on the radio, the state has painted itself into a corner, and there are reasons why that the Supreme Court may just take this case. Now, remember, 8,000 cases apply for cert, and the court only hears about 90 of them. So getting a case in front of the Supreme Court is not a foregone conclusion. However, there are certain circumstances where the court is far more likely to take a case than others. And if they take this case, the makeup of the court, legal scholars that I've heard recently all agree this case will be upheld, and then all 50 states will have constitutional carry.
And then they get to thank California for doing that, and the Ninth Circuit, right?
Yeah. And like I said, their arrogance knows no limit. If I were them, I would just take the loss on this one, and then I'd send the legislature into overtime. But they're not doing that. So here we go. And, you know, look, our rebuttal is pretty simple. Everything they say in their application, Bruin has already disallowed. They're using public safety. California lawmakers decided to allow this instead of that. Bruin said interest balancing is off the table. In other words, the Second Amendment, according to the Bruin Court, is interest balancing between the government and the people. No further interest balancing is possible because the United States citizens have the right to self-defense, and that is interest balancing. So, and the Second Amendment is not a second-class right. They're saying that life would be horrible here if we allowed open carry. Well, that's a public safety argument, which specifically took off the table. You cannot use the actions of a few criminals to deny everyone their rights. That comes from Heller. But everything that the state alleges in its appeal to the en banc, basically, and I've read it three or four times, I'm going through it line by line and writing my objections to it now with cites, but everything they allege has already been disallowed by the Bruin Court, the Heller Court, the McDonald Court, the Sitano Court, the Nunn v. Georgia. In Nunn v. Georgia, they said, you can restrict concealed carry, but you cannot restrict open carry. That is protected fully by the Second Amendment. These things are in black and white. The Peruta Court, even what California has done applying to the en banc, created a split in their own circuit because the Peruta Court says that you can concealed carry is not a right. States can regulate it, license it, they can ban it, they can do whatever they want with it. If there is a right guaranteed under the Second Amendment, it is the open carry, the right to openly carry. So even the Ninth Circuit agrees that open carry is a right. So if this en banc takes the case, they're going to create a split in their own damn circuit. And you can't have it both ways. Something has to be okay. Now they say if you allow one, you can ban the other, but allowing it is not the same as a right. There is a Second Amendment right. You may be able to regulate concealed carry. I don't like that, and I don't agree with it, but they're doing it. But if you do that, if you choose that, you cannot regulate open carry.
I ran into someone over at the event the other night on Thursday when we had the gubernatorial, five of them, speaking at a church, and I was talking to someone, Calvin Clark, who's an old friend of all of ours, and Calvin was saying, what about a constitutional sheriff? And, I know Steve has talked about constitutional sheriffs. Well, there isn't one in California, and they don't have to be, and they aren't. And our sheriff went to Sheriff Mack's class to be a constitutional sheriff, and he comes back saying his excuse, and this is a fact, his excuse is that he wouldn't want his officers called all the time if somebody just saw somebody with a gun on their hip. He wouldn't want the officers to go do that. His officers, it would make them nervous with people doing that, and that he can't allow something like that because it would just be too publicly disruptive. That guy's supposed to be a constitutional sheriff. This is insane. The sheriffs also, we need to,
How do all the other states manage?
Training.
Yeah, the other states are not falling apart because they have open carry, constitutional open carry. I guess people in California and Hawaii are just too stupid.
Well, look at their crime laws. They're probably a lot safer than California.
Per
capita.
I spent 2 days back and forth between Nevada and Arizona, and nobody shot me.
All of that verbiage that you just talked about is an absolute, and it's an absolute lie on the part of the state in order to control you. It is a lie. Even the state's expert witness, when asked under oath on the record, and we have that record, when you were a police chief, during open carry, did you ever have any problem with that? He said, no, I didn't. He said there were, you know, groups of people that did it and groups of people that didn't, but no, I never had any problem. Do you know of any jurisdictions that ever had problems because of open carry? No, I don't. So even the state's expert witness admitted there was never any trouble in California because of open carry. And by the way, how did we survive the first 165 years of the state of California because open carry was the law of the land just like it was everywhere else in the nation for our first 165 years of statehood? So why didn't society disintegrate? Why are there children that aren't in mental institutions here today? Because if it was so scary and such a destabilizing event, how did we survive the first 165 years of our history? Well, I know, because we just hadn't disarmed black people yet.
Mm, right.
And that's exactly what their excuse is. I mean, if, you know, the discriminatory position of that is just appalling. It is appalling,
and they defend it.
And they defend it.
Because liberals are funny. Liberals are funny. If they want something, it's good. Even when it's the most horrible, detestable thing you could possibly do, and they're all for it. So, hey, voters, you know, just kind of keep that in mind if you go to vote. That's where they stand. And they actually think that, and I'm telling you, they will kill you to prove it.
Well, remember what Mark Twain said. If voting really mattered, they wouldn't let us do it.
Right. Right.
Well, let me tell you, Joe Stalin knew that, and so did Castro, and so did Hugo Chavez and Maduro, and every other dictator on earth knows that. And California's dictators know it too. And let me say that the evidence is very clear. When little Anthony Portantino introduced the ban on the open carry of an unloaded weapon, he said, well, you don't need a weapon to go to McDonald's and buy a cheeseburger. Well, I think it was about 2 months after that, there was a mass shooting in a McDonald's in Alabama, which was stopped by a guy that had a gun.
Right. That's right.
He killed the attacker with a privately owned firearm. So, you know, look, folks, California is not a very good place to live. We have more illegal aliens than the rest of the nation. We have 10% of the population and a third of the nation's homeless people. We have drugs that are flowing in. We have people who steal and murder illegal aliens, and the governor protects them. He's a federal felon under Title 8, 1324. So is the legislature. They're engaged in insurrection against the federal government, and illegal aliens have killed a multitude of Californians, murdered them. And your only defense is the Second Amendment, if you had one.
And now the state wants to institute legislation that will require you to pay in order to leave the state.
Yeah.
Oh, they want you to pay. You know, you have to pay. You have to get a background check to get ammunition. You have to get a background check to buy a gun part. You have to pay a fee to do all of these things. You have to get a background check to exercise the Second Amendment. I don't know. I mean, what doesn't require a background check here, and what does the background check guarantee anyway?
Nothing. Well, and then why do they require, I mean, it's illegal for us to go to Nevada or any other state, buy ammo, and bring it back to California. We can go buy a car, we can go buy clothing, we can go buy food and gas. Why can we not buy ammo and weapons? I don't understand.
Well, you can go to Nevada and speak freely, but you know, you better be careful about that, because when you come back to California, unless you're on the right side, that's a pretty dangerous thing to do.
That's true.
And there'll be a permit for that coming, because look, if you can regulate the people's right to self-defense, you can regulate anything, because why? Because the people couldn't stop you.
Mm-hmm.
That's why.
Now, Mark, how do people help you? We've got about a minute and a half here.
Okay. The website is tokeepandbear.com, TOKEEPANDBEAR, all lowercase, no spaces, .com. There's a donate button if you prefer to use a credit card. And Wynn, would you please give the address for Pecan? If you want to send a check, please help us. We're about to go back to court. Every time I go to court, it's 30 grand. So please help us. And if you want to see the Second Amendment restored in California, open that wallet, because that's really the only thing that can stop us, is not having the money to pay. 100% of the money goes to the lawyer. I don't even know what bank the money's in. I never see the money. I don't touch the money. Someone else gets the bill for the lawyer, and the charity pays the lawyer I don't charge for my hamburger, my travel time, anything. This is simply to make sure this case is resolved in our favor, the people of the state of California. So please help me. And, Wynn, if you'd get that address, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, the address that you can send the check to. And don't forget, you can just make out the check to Keep and Bear and .com. Or to Keep and Bear. And then down at the bottom left-hand side of the memo on your check, put 2A just to make sure that it goes.